So thank you very much, Professor Benzi, for sitting with us. As we've discussed ahead of this interview, the theme of this series of interviews is the history of replica symmetry breaking in physics, which we roughly bound from 1975 to 1995, in which point we were very much involved with the Lesser-Penza group, or whether the Roman group. So, but before we dive into the heart of the topic, we have a few background questions. First, can you tell us a bit about your family and your studies before starting university?
My family?
Your background, where you come from.
Well, I mean, I was born in a middle-class family in Roma. And I started to be interested in physics when I was extremely young. My first book was a rather simple one, but was I bought it at 8 years. And so I was starting to learn a little bit about physics, and I was fascinating from that. And then when I was in the high school, I met an older guy who told me about the Feynman lectures on physics. And so during the high school, I was reading the Feynman lectures on physics. And from there, I never left the physics as a main topic. So my family was really disappointed by the fact that I was doing physics. They say, oh, my poor guy, so clever, and then you are going to waste your life in physics, okay? But then I went along, and then when I arrived here at La Sapienza, I think that the second year, probably, I met the younger brother of Giorgio Parisi, who introduced me to Giorgio. Okay. At that time, Giorgio was going to Columbia University, so it was 74 probably. And then at the end of the 74, when I was going to take my degree, because at that time there was no master degree or PhD, okay? And then I went to Nicola Cabibbo to ask for a thesis, and Nicola put me in the hand of Giorgio. And that was really interesting, because Giorgio decided to do a high-temperature expansion in the dimension where D is any number, okay? By using a very simple trick on the lattice, by going to very long wavelengths, so that the propagator was a Gaussian function, so you can do the expansion without caring about the topology of the different links. But that was the end of the story. At the very beginning, what he did was going to Geneva. We were two, myself and a friend of mine, Guido Martinelli, that you may know. Then what he did, exactly probably in this room, okay, what it was to draw a line, vertical line, and the horizontal line without any index, and say in the middle, our friends found the phase transition here. Now, I am going to leave for 1 month, but if you can read the last 15 years of physical review on the subject, then at the end of the month we can start to make the computation. So I look at the face of my friend, and the face of my friend was really showing the idea that we were lost in the middle of nowhere. That was the starting point. Ben and Giorgio was fantastic. We did the work in 3 months, and I remember that I did the computation of 1,500 Feynman diagram. Okay, and that was for me was enough. I didn't want to do any Feynman diagram for the rest of my life. Okay, but that was Giorgio was very very clever to introduce us in the problem.
Can you tell us about the theoretical physics training at La Sapienza at the time? And what courses were particularly memorable or interesting?
Well, the theoretical physics, I mean, it was a very difficult, I mean, it was a very strange time in 72, 74, because most people were considering theoretical physics, as they still do now, high energy physics. And in high energy physics, there was no clear statement about what to do. I mean, if you have to do a field theory, if you have to do the S matrix, if you have to invent some other tool to understand particle theory. There was quite strong evidence on the quark existence, but the framework was still unclear. And in 1084 there was the paper by Wilson, or in normalization group. No? So, I mean, it was an exciting period, but was too high for the training that we were doing. So we were essentially trained in statistical mechanics, but old style. No theory of phase transition. Theory of phase transition I learned from Giorgio, okay? And from Kadanoff.
So not even the Landau theory, like the infield theory?
No, nothing like that. I mean, the Landau Ginzburg equation was something that I discovered after, okay? So it is strange. Now we give to the students a very clear understanding of what is statistical physics and what is probably the first step in non-equilibrium statistical physics, okay? But at that time, there was no information about that. There was the Fermi-Dirac statistic, the Bose-Einstein statistic, there was a good course in solid-state physics, a wonderful course in nuclear physics, okay? But on the theoretical part, Giorgio was in Colombia, Nicola Gabibbo was Berkeley, Luciano Magnani was still working outside the university, so there were no really very good training in that sense. So we were reading everything that we could. Okay.
So what about the people like the statistical physics group, like Ionalasini or Di Castro?
But Iona, they were not teaching. Back from Padova in 1972, okay, and then I don't know what was teaching the few when I was here in Roma. Okay, so I didn't meet him during my courses.
So they were not teaching here. So
not yet.
So the only theorists in the department were Gabibbo and Magnani.
But the theory, I mean, there were a lot of people working. I mean, Altarelli was here.
Ah, yes.
Okay, Giuliano Preparato was here, Roberto Bertonzo was here. But they were already tuned at high level, so they were not. I mean, Altarelli was my teacher in quantum mechanics.
Okay.
That was very funny because they gave us a book which I don't remember, but I don't like it. I didn't like it, so I decided to read. I already read it, but I decided to read again the Feynman book, and then I discovered the Landau book. Okay, so when I went to the examination, I said to Altarelli, "Well, I was working on this book. You know it." And then he opened the front page and say, translated by Guido Altarelli. And so I say, okay, that's the end of my examination. And in fact, it was not true. I got the maximum vote for that. Okay? So there were, and then also, there was no training on computer. I mean, essentially, I start to learn computer together with Giorgio and Nicola Gabibbo. It was a nice.
So, from the point of view of field theory,
theory was essentially Maxwell equation. Okay.
Yes.
There was of course Dirac equation, the Schrödinger equation, but the field theory was a challenge as a tool for high energy physics. I understood in 70, I don't remember, probably 75, 76, I read the review paper by Weinberg and I think Glashow, I don't remember who were the other. But I mean, there was a review paper or review of modern physics on the standard model where all the ideas were there. And I do remember very well that I said, okay, so what is left? Because more or less all the basic mechanisms were explained in that review. And in 77, 78, three years after I took my degree, it was quite clear that the situation was going to move in this direction. But statistical mechanics, during my degree, I was giving a course on statistical mechanics using the Feynman book. So I
you were teaching a course?
Yes, of course, because Nicola was pushing me.
While you were a student,
yes.
A larger student.
I was a student and I gave a talk on this.
Okay.
I make the computation of, I don't remember what.
And what about condensed matter? Was
for solid state,
matter,
like
theory of
no, there was
matter.
A very strong group on condensed matter here. Yeah. Careri, Cicotti. I don't remember the name, but I mean, it was a very strong group. They were most experimentalist, and the theoretical focus point was solid state physics. And at that time, there was a very good teacher of solid state physics. When I took my degree, I make all the possible spectrum of courses, not focusing on only one subject, because I didn't know what to do, okay? So I took a course in astrophysics, in general relativity, astrophysics, in solid state physics, in nuclear physics, in condensed matter was, of course, the one that we should do anyway, and in theoretical physics, okay? So it was, condensed matter was not so tight to theoretical physics and statistical mechanics. Mm-hmm. Now it's completely different. At that time, molecular dynamics was still moving the few steps, no? I did the first simulation in molecular dynamics, I think, in 79. In 79. So, with 5,000 particles.
That's a lot.
That was huge.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, so you mentioned that you discovered computers with Giorgio and Nicola. Could you tell us a bit more about the details? Which computer? You discovered this computer programming and computer, computational physics.
Because when I graduate, the most powerful machine that you can have, you can buy, was a computer, not a computer, a calculator, okay, that was able to do the square root. Okay. And then after 2 years, they were able to do the log. I mean, that was an incredible step. And then there was the HP25 that nobody remembers, that was able to do programming. Okay, you were able to do 50 lines of program, so in order to repeat the same calculation. And I did my thesis was done on that. Okay, but if it was done on that, because we were doing, a lot of computations on by hand, and then the final computation was done on that. And then Giorgio was able to convince us to move the first step in Fortran. So I studied Fortran by myself, okay? And what we did was to do the computation in the National Laboratory in Frascati during the night. It was a computer free, and we went there for several nights to do the computation. Okay, but very, very elementary. I remember that my first computation was done in the following way: you put large floppy, you put inside the floppy in the machine. The machine was reading part of the program, doing part of the computation. Then you take away the floppy, you put another floppy for the other part of the computation. So there was a lot of checking, a constant checking on that, okay? So numerical simulation, as we think of it now, were completely outside. But the things were moving very fast, because in 81, 82, we already started to do some numerical simulation. So everything was done from scratch and by reading and learning by itself, by myself. As all that generation was doing. Mm-hmm. You don't know, but at the time I'm speaking, you were not able to write on a screen. You have a piece of paper called, I don't know, what is CADA in English? It's
card.
A card.
A card, exactly. You have a card, and you have to put all in the card, mm-hmm. Okay? So one of the favorite jokes was to take the card of someone else and to scramble it. So when everything was able, or you can put an instruction like, you will never be able to do this computation, it will look for 10,000 times. So the results were a lot of paper with this kind of information. Now, it was funny, but it was very, very tiring, okay? You can imagine how many hours we spent to do these kind of things.
So Giorgio was formerly based at Frascati at this time, and you were at La Sapienza.
Sometimes
so how did that?
We believe that Giorgio was formerly somewhere else because we didn't understand how he was getting all this information, okay? But he was formerly here, and then he got a position in Frascati. But he was working essentially in La Sapienza here in the department. But then I think from 72 to 75, he was visiting Colombia, and then he told us about the Wilson Cogut report, and we studied, and that is why we were introduced in the field.
But were there group meetings of well, with Giorgio or with Nicola Cabibo or as a community, or it was only you interacting directly with Giorgio?
The community of theoretical physics was working around Nicola Cabibo. That was the master of all of us, okay? Mm-hmm. Including Giorgio, as he said several times. Together with Nicola, there was an outstanding scientist that people do not know very well. That was Bruno Tuschuk. Bruno Tuschuk was really a top-class physicist and invented the electron-positron mechanism in Frascati. And so there was a group of theoretical physicists that recognized Nicola as a guideline for all of us. And there was Altarelli, as I said, Roberto Petronzio, Massimo Testa, who else? And Giuliano Preparato, of course. And there were meetings every few days on different subjects. Mm-hmm. Okay.
How were these meetings organized?
Sorry?
How did you organize these meetings? If there was like.
You come and arrive, there was a meeting, that's it.
Okay.
There was no
formal.
It was an informal.
Okay.
You had
a meeting room where you would.
Well, you enter in the room, you knock the door, can I speak? And then after a while there was another guy, and then you discuss it.
Okay. So
that was completely happening.
Okay.
No organization, and it was working perfectly well.
So after your time here, you moved to CNR to the.
Well, first I did the military service.
Okay.
Okay, that was a nightmare, okay.
In any way related to science, or was this...
No, absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, it was 1 year waste, okay. So after that, I got a scholarship at the CNR. At the time where there was the only position available were in oceanography. And that was interesting, because to do oceanography, you have to know about fluid mechanics. Somebody told us that this is important, okay? And so I start to study fluid mechanics, and in particular, turbulence, okay? And in 78...
And just to be clear, you joined that group because that was the only group that had positions? There was no positions otherwise open, or did you have a curiosity for...
The problem was at the time, that was strange, because in 75 there were a huge amount of position for to stabilize people that were under contract for several years. Okay, and here at the Institute of Physics we had more positions than people. So after that, the money was over. Okay, so for 3-4 years there were no other possibility. In fact, in 76 I asked Giorgio to go outside to take a PhD. And he told me, why? You want to work in the States? That was the statement, okay? There is no reason to take the PhD. And the point is that at that time the degree, the thesis degrees was almost a PhD. There were people spending 3 years on the thesis. Okay, mm-hmm. So, but that was a very old way to think about teaching. Okay, that now is over. And so for many years there were no available positions. So they start again in 78, but the money that was put on the table were on geophysics.
Okay.
Or solid state physics. Okay. So but and so I start to do this this fluid dynamic turbulence. Okay. And that was even more interesting because there was nobody in Roma that was working in turbulence. That was amazing. Okay, so we start to do the first step, the first thing on turbulence. When I say we, because at that time there was also Angelo Vulpiani that was that got the graduation. So we went together for the same position. And for 3 years I was there. But I did everything except oceanography, really. Although I spent 1 month in the Indian Ocean taking mission.
But so how constrained were you, I mean, how free were you to choose research ideas when you're hired
was,
in that?
That was always true. I mean, they left me completely free, okay? Actually, that was a good choice for me, but was a very dangerous choice for them because the people in the CNR were looking for somebody that was working in turbulence or specifically in the oceanography, but they were not, I mean, I could have spent my time sitting on the table playing cards for 3 years without any problem, okay? So it was a really a fluctuation that I was able to do something along these 3 years. And I did a lot of things, by the way. But I mean, at that time we were also starting to work on dynamical system theory. I mean, the paper by Laurent was on 63, but then the paper by Ruel was on 75. So we start moving in this direction, and Giorgio was pushing us in this direction as well.
So you were still in touch with Giorgio, even though you were.
I was going there every now and then to explain what was going on, and that was the reason why we work together with the stochastic resonance, by the way.
So where was the CNR?
Sorry?
The CNR was
an institute in the so-called EUR part of Roma, so far away from here. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Okay.
But we were not supposed to go there every single day, like in the university. So what happened is that we were working here, and sometimes we were going there.
Okay.
So
you were spending a big part of your time here.
But they were, I mean, that was a good way to I mean, if you give to a young student the possibility to do whatever he wants, of course you take a risk, okay? But if you support, then and the student is able to do a good job, then it's a fantastic possibility. And that is they were very clever for me. I mean, And so this is what I did.
In a recent talk you gave about the nonlinear dynamics work, you mentioned that you were discussing with Angelo Vulpiani, Alfonso Sutera, and Giorgio Parisi the nearly periodic alternance between glaciation and interglacial periods. How did this problem
came out?
Yes.
I explain you. We were working, we were listening, first of all, to the series of talks given by Jonas Lasinha on stochastic differential equation. Okay. At that time, the knowledge of stochastic differential equation was completely absent in this department. Okay, there was nobody working on this field. And Jonas Lasinha was introducing us to the theory of Wenzel and Freiling, which is not exactly the first thing you have to do. so in order to understand stochastic differential equation. But then we start to work on this, and we were able to understand how to obtain, for instance, exit time from a potential well, okay? Which we discovered later that was Cramer's computation, but I mean that was a different story. And then we also studied the book of Gitman's Korobot on the stochastic differential equation, that is a nice book. And then one of us, Alfonso, was in the States, working there at the Yale University, and he was interested, he got interested in climate change because of an extraordinary person that was working in Yale, who was Barry Saltzman. Barry was a fantastic scientist. I mean, he was behind the discovery of the Lorentz attractor. You know the story. He was the first guy that took the Rayleigh-Benard problem, make the expansion in orthogonal modes, a series of sinus and cosinus, and then he got 26 equations. Okay? And then he start to make the simulation of this 26 equation, and at a certain point he got a signal. A signal means that you have to look at the numbers and put at that time you have to put on the paper the information. Okay, a signal that was not periodic or quasi-periodic. It was clearly something else. And then he didn't understand what was going on because it was not even clear that the numerical simulation were correct. There were the problem that maybe truncation was giving you spurious physical properties in the system. And he went to Lorentz, that in fact, in the paper, make an acknowledgement. And Lorentz was able to extract from this the Lorentz model. And Barry was introducing Alfonso to climate change. And at that time there was a huge debate about the Milankovitch cycle. And the problem was that the forcing due to the change in eccentricity was too small to explain glacial interglacial period. Okay? And so Alfonso was starting to play with the stochastic differential equation that was introduced in climate theory by Asimov. And so when I visited Alfonso in 79, we started working together on this idea, try to understand how you can use this property of stochastic, what is the, let's say, non-perturbative effect of stochastic differential equation on climate models.
So you visited him at Yale?
No, I was visiting in Yale.
Okay.
Okay, I stayed there for 3 months. Okay. So we were working together, we wrote a paper on that. Then when I came back, I discussed with Giorgio and Angelo about this. And in fact, we wrote 2 papers with Angelo, but not on climate, but on turbulence, trying to understand whether the original Landau idea can be dressed by some fluctuation effect and used by turbulence in order to explain non-trivial scaling property like intermittency, okay? And then when Alfonso arrived, he gave a talk about this this property that we found, and that was the initial start of the work with George.
I see.
That is the, I mean, it's a long story. It doesn't come, I mean, you don't wake up in the morning and say, okay, let's work on Milankovitch. This doesn't work, you know?
So in that talk also you mentioned that working with Giorgio at the time was only through irregular meetings in town, so...
But even now, I mean, when you have to discuss with Giorgio, you discuss when you walk, when you take the elevator, or you go to the airplane, whatever, okay? It's very difficult to fix Giorgio on the blackboard. He has no time, as usual, okay? But it's always interesting to speak with him, okay? And in the case of stochastic resonance, it was on the second floor of this building, going out from the elevator. And I was going inside the elevator. We met together, and he said, I spoke with Alfonso, and I think that if you put the noise with the periodic forcing, you may find something interesting. Okay? Because you see, you have an exponential effect, and then you start thinking how to do it. And then soon I convinced Giorgio that you cannot do by hand, you have to do numerically, okay? And so we did it numerically. That's it.
I see. How was the work received initially?
Very well.
Immediately?
I mean, when I gave the talk in 1980 at Elche, there was Asselman there. There was most of the people that were working in climate theory, and they immediately understood that that was non-trivial. Mm. Okay, outside the Irish meaning was a nightmare. We sent it to science, rejected. Journal of Atmospheric Science, rejected. Okay, and then after a while, when I discussed with the climatologist in England, I remember he told me, if the effect of the noise, okay, he told me exactly this word: if this is physics, I prefer sex. But the most interesting answer was given to me by Kalanov when I told the story. He told me, maybe sex is better anyway. But then, I mean, after a short while, Michael Gill convinced us to send the paper to Thames. And then we send the paper to Thames. That's it.
Okay. And that went smoothly.
And
after
was starting the game.
So what was the criticism?
Sorry?
What was the criticism to the paper?
Two main criticisms. The first one was a cultural problem, okay? It's still there. You know Stefan Fulbe, I guess. Okay, fantastic. Stefan Fulbe did a fantastic experiment on dynamo. And he observed the reversal in time of the magnetic field experimentally. Okay? Now, that dynamo was small, of course. And astrophysically and geophysically, you have two kinds of dynamo that is very well recorded. One is the magnetic Earth, and the other one is in the Sun. And they have two completely different time scales. Mm? Actually, I discovered that the two community do not speak each other, but this is another story. Okay? So the idea that you can change one, let's say, if you can reverse, okay, the full circulation, okay, by effect of the noise, is something that is difficult to accept. The problem is what you think is a noise. In 2005, I wrote a paper showing that if you take a model of Navier-Stokes equation, which has two possible states by symmetry, of course you have to put them by hand, but this is a part of the large-scale effect, then the effect of the fluctuations give you the reversal in time. And they give you the reversal time exactly as if it is a noise. Okay? But this is not noise, it's the fluctuation of the Navier-Stokes equation. Now, in the case of climate, things happen in the same way. But this was not accepted. That was the real problem. The second step was a little bit more funny, because it was when you have a transition, from one state to another, and you do the graphics, then you have a jump. But actually, this is not true. If you plot every single time step, you see some little step, let's say a rare fluctuation which goes in one direction. Of course, the probability is exponentially small. Okay. And then the idea is that the noise was giving you a large fluctuation, which is wrong. Because the difference between large fluctuation and rare fluctuation is fundamental in understanding this effect. That's the point. These were the two main criticisms concerning climate. And in climate, at that time, nobody found any abrupt change in the record. Now they found it.
The resolution was not fine
enough. That's it. Okay.
At about the same time as that work came together, Giorgio was working on spin glasses.
Yeah.
And were you aware at all of that work?
No, he told me about it. Okay. But it was a very abstract meeting. I mean, I went there to discuss about turbulence. Then he told me about the computation of the solution of the spin glass. Okay. But he gave me the technical tool. He explained me the technical tool. And without the physics behind, I was absolutely unable to understand what was really the problem. Okay. I discovered the problem afterwards.
Because you had never heard of spin glasses before.
No, I didn't understand the problem at all, physically.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was too much involved in turbulence to spend other time in other direction.
So when would this have been?
It was 81, 82.
That he explained to you the technical...
Sorry?
When did he explain to you these technical details?
I think it was around 80.
1980. Okay.
I mean, I cannot...
So, while Giorgio was working on this solution of the SK model, in Rome, did he give talks or...?
No.
It was only informal, he would only talk about it in private conversations.
Private conversation.
So, the community, let's say, in Rome was not aware of this?
Absolutely. The community in Rome, I mean, Giorgio, most of the work did when he was in Paris in 78, I guess, 79, or 77, 78, I don't remember exactly. But in 78, by sure, because I was there visiting him for 2 weeks, okay? And in fact, he was working on that, and for 2 years I was there. And then when he came back in Rome, around 80, I don't remember that any talk about this on spin glass. We were aware that he was working on spin glass, but we were thinking of a rather exotic subject. Okay, remember that before that was a huge work done on instantons in quantum field theory by Giorgio. That was very interesting work, and there was the work done with other people on the characteristic, I mean, on the time scale of ergodicity for the lambda 5-4 theory. So there was a lot of things on the table, and to us, the problem of spin glass was not really the top one.
What about more generally the physics of disorder?
What
about the physics of disorder more generally? Like, was disordered systems?
No, the most disordered things at the time was turbulence.
But it was a different kind of disorder, right?
Well, I mean, but the idea was still the same. I mean, the student, the idea was that the interesting part of turbulence mechanics is what happens before turbulence. That turbulence is like the high energy phase of Heising model, it's irrelevant, okay? And then we have to change our mind, and so that was the most disordered things. The spin glass was not on the table.
But
I understood that really well the problem, I think around 83-84, when the first few papers came out with the physical interpretation and the possible output. At that point it was clear that it was a hot topic.
But the difference, I think, between turbulence and spin glasses is that in spin glasses you have quenched disorder. Which, while in turbulence is like
self-generated.
There is a, technically speaking, there was a thing which I asked, a few months ago, Giorgio came to us and gave a talk for the memory of Roberto Petronzi. And I asked him, Giorgio, when were you introducing the multifractal? Were you thinking of the complexity function in spin glass? And he said, well, and then There was no answer. Then after a couple of hours, he sent me an email, yes, thank you for the question. This was precisely what I had in mind. Mm. So the two things were not, they were not so far away. I mean, it's true that they are questioned, okay? But it's also true that if you look at the way energy is going from large scale to small scale in a turbulent flow, okay, it is changing in time, but during the time where the energy goes down, you have a kind of quenching of the possible scale. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the two ideas have something in common, but you have to play with the time in turbulence. That is has no role for the turbulence.
To dive a bit into the what led to this problem. I mean, in a topical review that Angelo Vulpiani wrote, he credited lectures that Giorgio gave on turbulence at the Varina Summer School in 1983 as sort of the origin of your interest in multifractal nature of turbulence. Yeah. Can you tell us a bit more about how you became interested in these ideas and that particular viewpoint?
We were thinking a lot about turbulence, okay, and in particular about intermittency. Then in 1983, I asked Giorgio to help me in organizing a Varenna school on geophysical fluid dynamics and predictability, where one of us, Alfonso, was giving a lecture on stochastic resonance. Okay? And so Giorgio came. At that time, he was writing the book on statistical field theory. So you arrived with the typewriter, a lot of papers, okay, writing this book. And then that was the school where, for the first time, Uriel Frisch showed the results about the anomalous scaling of all moments, at the time few, but I mean eight, on turbulence. And so the idea that was behind intermittency was a stick on the fractal dimension introduced by Mandelbrot. Okay? So the idea is that you have this vortex or you have sheets, those kinds of stuff in the turbulence behavior, which have a fractal dimension statistically. So you play with the idea of geometry that has some random property. And then if you use this idea, you are able to obtain two things: anomalous scaling for the few moments and the agreement with the Kolmogorov equation, which is an exact equation. And then, of course, the question is that the results obtained by Uriel were not correct. They were, so to speak, against this interpretation, that this interpretation was too naive. Now, we were lucky for three reasons. First of all, Uriel didn't put the error bar on the numbers. If at that time you were putting the error bars, they were so huge that there was no possible discussion. A straight line was still fixing. Second, Giorgio was there. And so for two days we were discussing together about what is the possible generalization of this interpretation. And there were several routes, and then eventually he came out with this simple idea of the multifractal. The multifractal is simple and abstract, which is always the taste of Giorgio. It's simple and abstract. Now, the problem is that simple is good, abstract is a nightmare. Because we have to fight for, I guess, 20 years to convince people that the original idea was correct. And now we have a very good ground to say that the original idea of Giorgio was correct, and we have the possibility to make prediction starting from there, which is non-trivial in turbulence. Okay.
So the original reception of this proposal was also challenging, or was publication?
No, as usual, I mean, the original, everybody was enthusiastic because everybody was looking, working on the fractal. So the idea to have more time, to more room to write papers, as usual, okay, make people enthusiastic. There were some discussion because one of us, Giovanni Paladin, gave our paper to Kadanov in Trieste in 85. And after a while, Kadanov, Procaccia, and other people wrote a paper on the multifractal without putting the name of our paper, without citing, okay? And so Giorgio wrote a letter to Kadanov, and Kadanov said, yes, you are right, okay? It was, Kadanov was a gentleman, and also I am sure, because I worked with him, that he was really forgetting who gave him the paper, okay, and even reading the paper. So so Kadanov wrote an article in Physics Today making the full story and acknowledge our results, okay, that was the point. But the idea was originally very well accepted in the statistical physics community, okay? In turbulence, if you were speaking with turbulence people, they immediately rejected this point of view. And this was the starting point of our fight. Mm-hmm. A lot of amusing. I mean, if you do something that everybody agrees, then it's boring. If there is discussion, then you start to understand very well. Yeah. And then this is the most interesting part of the job.
Sorry, I had another question on the previous one. So when Giorgio was working on this spin glass stuff, so you said he was mostly working in Paris and not talking too
most
much.
Most of the basic idea.
So what about, still I think in this department there was a group of people working on like impurities in solid state physics.
Probably. I don't know because
localization. You were not.
No.
So you don't know. You don't remember if there was any discussion between.
No, not to my knowledge. No.
Okay.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
So
it is clear that most of the people. I mean, the people. People like Giovanni Gallavotti was really very well introduced into this problem. Like Iona Lassigno as well. But remember, that was the time also in which, when Giorgio was here, most of the time was spending, at the beginning of the 80s, was on the Apple supercomputer. That was a really strong effort of many people, okay? And the Apple supercomputer was not done for the spin glass at the very beginning, not even for turbulence.
Following your work on turbulence with Giorgio, I think your publication records start to be more distinct, right?
Well, no. Up to the point where Giorgio was, Giorgio was working at Tor Vergata up to the 92-93, I guess. And so from time to time we were discussing, okay? So we wrote several papers together on the subject. I was working, I was discussing with him the problem of the Lattice-Boltzmann equation, because that was our breakthrough to do simulation of parallel computer. And we were discussing a lot on Shannon models, that is a simple model where to test the multifractal idea, and so on. Then he moved here. In La Sapienza, and then from 95 to 2003 I was working in the government essentially, in the one of these authorities, and so I was really following a little bit of what was doing. But up to 93-94 we were very close together and working, Then we were essentially working in direct numerical simulation of turbulence. That was our major effort. And he participated also in the discussion when we did the extended set seminar, all this step. Okay? So, I mean, it was... we were not writing a lot of paper together, but two of them were important and interesting. Okay?
I see.
And then I start to understand better the spin glass when I move to soft matter, the simulation of lattice Boltzmann. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about this era that we may have overlooked?
The era, the time of
where you formulated the multifractal nature of turbulence and then spin glass and this era. So the late 70s or the mid 70s to the
90s. I don't know if I understand correctly, but you want to understand the period of time where these two ideas were merging together.
When we're trying to understand your perspective on what was happening and then your experience working with Giorgio on different problems at that time.
Well,
and is there something
the
we
experience I had was the one in 92, really. We organized a school on turbulence, no longer geophysics, only turbulence, in Le Souche. So I invited Giorgio, and he gave a talk on the work we did together on the Shell models. There were other people, and among them, there were Sasha Migdal, that was the son of the famous Migdal of phase transition. Okay. But also the guy, the son was is extremely guy, clever. Okay. So he started to be interested in turbulence, and he was giving a talk about circulation. You see, one of the problems of turbulence is what is the correct way to characterize the statistical property of turbulence. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot take one point, so you take the correlation function, as you do in field theory. But this is not written on a stone. You can take other things. For instance, you can take the circulation on a loop, okay? And see whether the statistical property of the circulations are different or similar, we can say something and so on. So he was making the claim that the statistical property of circulation were no anomalous scaling. And I remember a huge discussion in 92, together with other 100 people, okay, where Giorgio stand up, went to the blackboard, and he gave a demonstration why the argument is wrong. That was a very nice. But again, for instance, if you look at the that particular meeting, there was the interpretation of a talk by Giovanni Galavotti on the existence of the new theorem about the existence and unity of the Navier-Stokes equation. That was somehow inspired from the spin glass theory. So there was a first cross-fertilization between the two fields. But you have, of course, two different phenomena, so it is clear that was not a direct mixing. Where there was a strong mixing was in 85 in the artificial, in the OPFI model.
Mm-hmm.
That
yes.
was a completely different story.
Yes.
I was working at that time at IBM, research center,
mm-hmm.
and one of my, I mean, I put up, I was able to convince IBM that the IBM should have a group in computational physics. I don't know how I was able to do that, but they give me a group in computational physics. So we start to use the supercomputer that were not really super, but okay, to do computational physics. And one particular topic that we chose was the neural networks.
Okay.
So the work by Giorgio. Giorgio was visiting there several times together with Nicola, and we were working together on understanding how to make simulation or how to improve our understanding of neural networks, the optical model, and so on. And there was a paper, very nice paper, by Paternello and sometime and another guy, which I don't remember, that was inspired by Giorgio. And Giorgio is still, I mean, he always cited this paper by Paternello. That was one of the things that was coming out from this collaboration.
So where was this, where was the research center?
The center.
The IBM.
The center was in Roma, because at a certain point there were, somebody suggested me to send to make a discussion with IBM. And so I went to a colloquium. We discussed about the research center in IBM. Remember, at that time, IBM was fighting to get a position in supercomputer. Okay, so, I mean, at that time, IBM was computer. There was no Apple, no Microsoft, nothing. Okay, so at that time there was only a Microsoft, but there was only IBM and UNIVAC. UNIVAC was most for the scientific computation, and IBM was everything else. So IBM were supposed to launch the new mainframe with parallel computing and vector computing to challenge Cray. And it was also IBM was also thinking to launch the PC, the personal computer, that came out in 82. Okay, so we discussed about the possibility to do some research, because they were not really doing research; they were supporting, in some sense, the IBM in showing that the mainframe at that time were able to do something also for research. Was a kind of showing room.
Demonstration.
And so they were changing the idea and trying to push this direction of research, and they were establishing a European Center for Vector and Parallel Computing here in Roma. Okay? So I was able to convince that computational physics was one of the topics, together with others, like image processing, okay, and so on. And so they gave me five guys. One is Saulo Succi, that is still working with me. The other one is Sant'Angelo, Paternello, and other people. Okay, so for 7 years I was working there. Okay, and then when I got the position at the university, I left the IBM.
And so you say that Giorgio and Nicola were visiting regularly.
Quite often. I remember a lot of.
And what was the did you discuss? So you discussed about neural networks.
One of the things that we were discussing was exactly the 38. I mean, one of the computers in IBM was called the 3080. Okay, they have this strange name. Okay, 3080 was one AL 9000 was. From Stanley Kubrick,
yes,
is an example. Also, so that they have the 3080, and the 3080 was very expensive. Okay, now, so the one of the idea that they had at CERN was to build up an emulator of the 3080, which was a machine, very simple. And they made a lot of them in order to get the data from the collider and to make the analysis as fast as possible. Okay, you remember that at that time Nicola was thinking about the APE, so they were visiting and discussing with us how to build up APE and how to collaborate. As IBM, I was part of the meeting in CERN when Nicola discussed the app with the other people. That was a fantastic meeting.
So the Oakfield model came.
The Oakfield model was one of the things that we were working to. I didn't work on the Oakfield model, but I followed the work that they did, of course. I was responsible for that. Okay. So they were working on that. I mean, Stefano Paternello was working on spin glass also. So, on pots.
Was the IBM research lab in Rome at all in touch with the U.S. one, where, let's say, with Scott Kirkpatrick?
Yeah, they were visiting regularly the Yorktown lab, and the other one, the other research center, both in Europe and in the States. And there was the idea to set up a kind of Yorktown lab in Europe. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But then, for a reason that I never understood, in 87 the stock of IBM was crashing by factor 2, and so they canceled immediately this. And the other thing that I do remember to sit down in one of the meetings with the people that was responsible for the personal computer, okay,
mm-hmm.
that was moving the step, first step of personal. And the guy unfortunately died after a few months, together with all the collaborators, in a car, in air crash. And that is one of the reasons why all the development of the software was given to Microsoft.
Ah.
Well, Microsoft was one of the things that you were seeing on the screen when you started to work with this PC, but then nobody knew about Microsoft. Okay, what the Microsoft but okay. I must say that the software in IBM was not so good. Anyway.
In
so there was this link, okay?
Okay. In closing, do you have any notes or papers or correspondence from that epoch? And if you have preserved them, do you have a plan to deposit them in an academic archive at some point?
I have a picture, probably, but not a note.
Okay.
No. I should not remember to have any notes.
You don't have letters?
Letters.
No.
No. Like, for example, this letter that Giorgio sent to Kadanov to ask for.
No, I don't have. Probably. Maybe Angelo may have it, but I don't have it.
Okay.
No. I have a lot of stuff, but you know that in the last 20 years, everybody throw away all the papers, okay? So it is difficult to find something that is still manually. I have letter that Sergio wrote recently, but this is irrelevant. No. It was a lot of fun anyway. Yeah. Really a lot of fun.
Professor Benzi, thank you very much for this conversation.
It's my pleasure.